The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Have the changes in the banking industry affected you? With the looming possibility that your local bank branch might disappear and more web, mobile, and social technologies, what will the changes mean for you and your business? Welcome to Breaking Banks with your host, Brett King. The possibility that banking is no longer a place you go, but just something that you do, has become very real. Now, here is Brett King.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks this week. Now, if you've been watching the news, there's some really interesting developments coming down the pipe in terms of the whole mobile payments play. In fact, the rumor mill has it that the iPhone 6 is going to feature NFC technology. Now, this rumor has been floating around for the last few years with the iPhone, but there's some pretty good sources citing the changes around this. First of all, there's an interesting report that came from Brightwire, and that cites that Apple has done a big deal with China UnionPay, incorporating NFC payments into the company's passbook application, adding to sort of the China UnionPay solution there. Ming Chi Ku of KGI Securities also claimed last month that Apple's integrating NFC chips into the iPhone 6 and has data on NFC suppliers who are incorporating in that. And the other really interesting news, of course, which if some of you have been watching my Twitter feed over the last couple of days, you would have seen that Apple, it was actually reported in Forbes, that Apple has been tooling up their Apple stores around the world with new Easy Pay mobile point of sale services, enabling to accept EMV chip cards and to accept NFC payments. So it's a pretty good bet that if Apple stores are gearing up with NFC-capable terminals, that they're going to have a device that supports that. So the mobile payments world could get a whole lot more interesting after this announcement or after the launch of the next iPhone scheduled for the first week of June with the Mobile World Developers Congress for Apple. When it comes to mobile payments, this is not just an area that it's limited to payments at the point of sale. In fact, some of the biggest payment activities that are happening around the world today are Visa and MasterCard rails. Some of those are P2P. PayPal is one of the biggest providers of mobile payment technologies, obviously, in the world today. And then you've got M-Pesa in Kenya and other things. So mobile payments are exploding. And today it's great to have on the show a startup based out of the Nordic region, Norway. Mcash in February raised their A round for just over 5 million euro and has launched what I think is a really fantastic looking app. And I was there recently with Daniel Dodelin, who's the CEO, was able to see some of the stuff they're doing not long after they'd launched it. So it's great to have Daniel join us on the show today. Daniel, welcome to Breaking Banks podcast show.
Thanks, Brett. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
So tell us a little bit more about Mcash. Tell us about your financing round. Just tell us how it started and where you guys are at today.
Yeah, so I mean, the story behind Mcash is basically related to my story. I'm the founder of the company, and I started my story with a bunch of different companies. I started mobile-wise. I started to look into the mobile space in actually 1999, so 1 year before the 2000 millennia. As you may know, Norway is fairly early on with mobile services. We were one of the first countries out there to play around with text messaging and all the value-added service space and all that. So in 2006, I was basically you know, pretty sick and tired of doing value-added services with these text messaging services. So when the rest of the world was adopting these new type of services with, you know, ringtones, logos, wallpapers, interactive TV and everything, I started to look into mobile payments. Fairly naive, as a typical entrepreneur and founder, I decided to just solve this problem. I knew a lot about technology, but nothing about the payment space. So I used 3 years to figure out how the Norwegian payment space works, which is kind of proprietary because we got both the Visa and MasterCard systems, but we also got a proprietary debit system here in Norway, which is very efficient. In fact, Norwegians are world champions on card usage per capita. So it's a very interesting space to do these type of developments in because it's a fairly small environment. You got technology people adopting smartphones faster than anybody else in the world. We got 110% mobile phone coverage in the population, so every person has like more than one mobile phone on average. So it's a very interesting space to innovate within, and specifically on the subject of mobile payments. So the idea came in 2006, and it was formalized in 2010 when the Norwegian company was established and set up. It was funded privately first by me and my co-founder and a few close friends, classical FFF. And then later on,
we know all about that.
Yeah. it's been a very interesting journey. Early on, we catch the attention of some very interesting people within the payment space up here in the Nordics. Actually, also the founder of a company called Point, mostly known for their longer name, Point Transaction System, that was later acquired by Verifone.
They did POS technology, or they're a processor?
Yes. No, they did POS technology. So they were the leading provider of card reading terminals in the Nordics, and then later on the Northern Europe. And as I said, they were acquired by Verifone. But their founder is actually Norwegian, and he became one of our early on stock owners and investors, and helped us a lot to you know, get to know this space the right way and see what the kind of old school guys did, and helped us to figure out what we could do to make it better. So that's briefly the background. We're about 30 people right now, and as you mentioned, we're fairly well financed, at least for our current plans for the next 24 months, targeting the Norwegian market, which is what we're doing right now. And as you mentioned, when we did the famous selfie, you were up here in Trondheim.
Yes.
We're up here in Trondheim, and we've just launched. It's been a fantastic journey. We're very happy and very satisfied with the results. And for the listeners out there, I think I would really enjoy telling them more about what we're actually doing, because as you mentioned, the whole thing with.
Tell us how the customers use Mcash today, because that's where the rubber hits the road, as they say.
Yeah. So here's the story behind the product, though. So what we're basically doing right now is we're making it easier for Norwegians to pay. We're removing what we call the pain in payments. Now, to stand behind that statement, we need to define what are the actual pains and what is the gain of using Mcash. So here's the theory behind the service that we've now proven seems to be the right theory for this type of payment service. So what you want is that you would like to charge any payment that you do, you would like to be able to charge it to any of your available funding sources. That's the theory, and the theory behind our technology. So you would like to use, you know, any funding source, your bank account, your credit account, or a line of credit, or even a pre-stored value if you want to. So on one side of the Mcash spectrum, you got all your money, and we connect to it, regardless of what funding source you would like to use.
Yeah.
And on the other side of the spectrum are all the different payment scenarios that you find yourself in every day, like paying in a store, paying online from your phone, so not only your tablet or your computer, but also from your phone, which we see a huge rise in mobile traffic, what we define as m-commerce, and also paying inside apps, and depending on where you are in the world, new payment situations like shopping your groceries from an advertisement, or getting a new radio-controlled drone for the kids shipped home by another drone. There's some issues with the shipping home with the drone part, but that's not our problem to solve. Amazon is on it, so that's great. And there's the one final situation as well, which is key, and you touched upon, which is paying person to person. So our product connects to all the funding sources on one side of the spectrum, and then on the other side of the spectrum, we try to provide the same simple and secure payment experience with one tool in every scenario, every time. And that has been the core essence in our product. So the idea is that you can use your phone to pay in any situation, not only the situations that you successfully can pay with your cards today. So that's the core of our product. And obviously, we focus on different segments first. So the segments that we're focusing on first is where you have the highest amount of pain, which is obviously for Norway, it's paying person to person, because there's no really good tool for that besides using your online bank system. And if you use the online bank system, you need to log in with some security mechanism, which is a pain. You need to be by your computer, or you need to set up your mobile phone to do it, specifically from your mobile bank provider. You still need the account number of the recipient and so on. So it's still a huge pain with the old tools. So what we've done is that you simply send money to the recipient's mobile phone number, which you have in your address book on your phone anyway. So it's very easy.
Yeah, I'm looking at the interface here, and you've got the instantaneous payments, which is obviously a key requirement these days. Everyone's talking about faster payments, but you've done a lot of work on really making it a very simple interface. Is that a strong part of the ethos in terms of taking the pain out of payments, that it has to be really easy to use?
Absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, we tend to, as human beings, to gravitate towards stuff that is simple, right? So even though payments are very sophisticated, and I mean, Mcash is way more than just the interface you see. It's a completely new infrastructure that connects merchants, banks, and the end users in a real-time network. So in that perspective, we're much like Devala. As as payments experts, we all know what Devala is all about. We've developed our own Devala network on the back end of Mcash, and we also interconnect with the other networks, the traditional payment networks. So we connect to everything. But yes, absolutely. I mean, making it simple, making it smooth, making it attractive is obviously a key mantra in everything that we design, while also keeping it secure, obviously, just very important.
Well, I wanted to delve into this bit. We had Ben Milne, the founder of Devala, of course, on one of our early shows. It's almost a year ago, actually, because we're coming up to an anniversary of Breaking Banks. And Ben was saying, can you hear me? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Congratulations on the anniversary.
Thank you. And Ben was saying that, and this echoes what you were saying as well, is that when they jumped into this, he wanted to fix the pain points on the payment side, but it took quite a bit of time to learn the ropes and figure things out, which is, I think, why we haven't seen an explosion of kids in garages in Silicon Valley sort of coming up with the next, the Facebook of banking or the Facebook of payments, because you do have to integrate into the existing system. And the existing system has a ton of friction around it. So that is a huge opportunity, to simplify things. Do you see that as your greatest competitive advantage in the market, that element of removing the friction and removing the pain?
Well, I think one of the main competitive advantages that Mcash has in this market is that we actually are holistic in terms of the different payment networks. Like Devala, for instance, has this very crude, they've developed their own network with the upside of having your own network, but also with the challenges, because you need to build that whole network up, right? You're building from the ground up. It will take a long time, and you're keeping a lot of players out there in the cold. Now, we don't necessarily like interchange any much more than Devala does, but we also accept the fact that there's a lot of established habits, established infrastructure, established merchants, established bank systems, established revenue streams, and consumer habits around paying with your card. So rather than fighting the card, we integrate towards them. As I said, we're holistic about, or agnostic, or what do you want to call it, towards where you would like to fund your transaction from. And I think that's a key selling point, because we connect with everything. Yes, there are some costs involved with alternative A, B, and C, and you know D and E and F is cheaper. But you know you get to choose, and I think that's key.
I think it is key, and it also shows that when you think about this world of payments in terms of just trying to solve the problem of getting money to, from A to B more efficiently, is that the existing rails, you know, what we would say in the US, or wire transfers or the ACH bank-to-bank network, you know, the Visa and MasterCard rails, SWIFT transactions, all of those rails sort of become less important. They sort of become behind the scenes. And at the end of the day, if you had a really good P2P system or bank-to-bank account system that was very seamless, then you know that's all you would need to do. If I could ensure that I could put in the money I owe you or the money I want to pay you and it goes from my bank account to your bank account in real time, then a lot of the need for the, you know, having the Visa or MasterCard rails there to enable an instant payment would really be challenged. Is that a fair enough statement, you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're spot on. As I said, as a consumer, you don't necessarily care about, you know, where you're pulling the money from, which technology is being used in the back end, how, you know, institution A or institution B handles this. You want it to be instant, you want it to be convenient, you want it to happen now, and you want to have the option of choosing whatever you want. The technology behind a service like MCash and other competitive services should make that happen for you seamlessly. And we try to do that.
No, absolutely. So tell us about how you know, what sort of traction you're making in the Norwegian market. Now, you're not just in Norway, or have you expanded outside of Norway as yet, or you're just focusing on Norway right now?
Yeah, we're just focusing on Norway right now. We're staffing up to meet the demands of our inbound sale, actually, which is very, you know, positively humbling for us, because obviously we've done something right. So there's a lot of potential business going on outside of Norway. Right now, we're kind of focusing inwards towards Norway. We're in a huge onboarding process with some of the largest merchant brand names in Norway. We've just been on the streets for 2 months. And we're growing in Norway terms. This is big, with around 1,000-1,500 new customers on average a day.
That's great.
Yeah, it's very good.
That's good for any market.
We're super happy with the numbers, we're turning on a few more thousand merchants that we have in the pipe right now, and there's a lot of new sales going on. So merchants are actually coming to us saying we would like to have this. And I think one of the key points which I would like to point out relating to your intro here when talking about Apple is that MCash is also offering debit transactions, meaning direct payments from your bank account with 100% settlement, so equal to whatever Davala is typically offering, for merchants, which is very interesting if you look at the e-commerce channel, which is currently globally dominated by credit card transactions with the interchange scheme behind it.
So listen, Daniel, let's have a quick break. And then after we come back off the break, we can sort of continue to talk about where you think the payments world is going over the next few years. Okay?
Great. Sure.
Great. So you're with Brett King and Daniel from MCash on Breaking Banks. We'll be right back after this short break.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Attend Payments 2014 to meet the forward-thinking leaders and disruptors who are transforming how we pay and get paid. Get a glimpse into the next wave of payments innovations and challenges through fast-paced interactive demonstrations, educational sessions, and a buzzing exhibit hall. Register now at payments.nacha.org. Payments 2014 is presented by NACHA, the Electronic Payments Association, the recognized leader in payment system education. The Payments Conference, transform imagination into strategic innovation. Register today at payments.nacha.org.
Bob Pritchard has over 30 years of experience as a straight-talking business consultant and author, working with some of the top Fortune 500 companies. Now he's come to the Voice America Business Channel to help you and your business. Tune in to the Bob Pritchard Radio Show for information about starting and successfully running a profitable business. From the movers and shakers to great marketing screw-ups, you can't afford to miss a single edition of the Bob Pritchard Radio Show, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. Before the break, we were talking with Daniel Dolderlin. Is that how I pronounce your surname, Daniel?
No, it's almost. I get a lot of versions, so you can say you can just call me Deadline.
Deadline. We were talking MCash's growth, and you were explaining to us that you were focusing on the merchant side of the business currently. Tell us about some of the merchants who are integrating with MCash's platform.
Yeah, some well-known brand names, international ones. So we got Burger King, we got Starbucks, we got the largest pizza chain in Norway, which is called Peppa's Pizza, equivalent of Domino's Pizza. And a lot of local coffee shop names, competitors of Starbucks. Some of the larger grocery chains are hooking up. Convenience stores are joining. There's some names there that I'm not allowed to say yet, but they are launching this summer, so that will be interesting. So we feel we have very good traction in all the different segments, which is very important to us. Because we're new at this, right? We're a technology-driven company. We develop everything in-house. We own all the IP and everything. So we need to have customers that demand stuff from us. We don't know how to sell pizzas, and the pizza guys will tell us what we can do better. We don't know how Starbucks sells coffee, and they can teach us. The same for Burger King. I mean, Burger King was the first merchant we onboarded in Norway. We launched in all their restaurants in one day. You can imagine that was a challenge. Besides the interesting...
Big deal. Yeah. So how did you do that? Was that via an update to their point of sale or...?
Yes. What we do is that we integrate towards the point of sale. That's also part of the business structure that we have, and we're completely transparent about it, is that... normally, all the modern merchants out there today, at least in our market, they have a fairly advanced cash registry system. So not the traditional card reading terminal, but their actual cash registry. So what we do is that we define these guys as integrators. So the guys that deliver any type of hardware or software or solutions to the merchants out there related to the payment space, we define them as integrators. So what we do is that we offer them a chance to implement MCash payment functionality by consuming our APIs into their solutions. And when they give that to the merchants, they get a small commission. They don't get any commissions for card payments. So actually, our integrators are motivated to distribute our payment system to their own merchants, which is very interesting. So it creates a totally new dynamic. And that drives distribution.
Do you think that that's part of the driver here is that they're seeing more demand for mobile payments as well? That the customers who frequent Burger King are more likely to just want to use their phone?
No, I don't see that. I think it's a hard push to get consumers convinced. I don't believe for now. I'm talking about the merchant setup where you're in the store.
Yep.
There's no real incentive for you to pay with your phone. So we have to create that incentive. And I believe that the dynamics around these incentives are driven by something completely different. It's driven by the merchant. If you can get the merchant to understand the value of performing, in our case, an MCash transaction. And now there's three very specific values for that. Value number one is that if the customer pays with a bank account or any debit-based funding source connected to MCash, the transaction is cheaper. So we save the merchant transaction-wise. So it's a cheaper transaction. There's an economical motivation for the merchant to do it.
That's a pretty strong incentive for merchants. If you look at a lot of the, even here in the U.S., the merchant exchange and so forth, a lot of it is about trying to minimize interchange.
So this correlates with what Devalla is doing, right? That's their main incentive. You can move money virtually for free, and it also works with merchants. So if you pay with your mobile phone using MCash at a merchant, and you charge a funding source which is direct debit, it's a cheaper transaction for the merchant. So that's incentive number one. incentive number two is that if the customer for some reason decides to charge a credit, a line of credit of some sort, MCash is competitive on the interchange fee, so you don't really lose anything. There's no incentive for the merchant to say, hey, please pay with your card. They can always rely on MCash trying to be very competitive, and since you have the chance of paying with debit, you will save eventually. So both debit and credit transactions should be very competitive. Now, the third, and in my head, the most important value for the merchant is access to data. and we do this quite differently than a lot of other schemes that we've seen out there, because there's a lot of schemes out there that basically just share all the data they have, desperately trying to get merchants on board. What we've done is that we've implemented, as you may know, the OAuth protocol. We've redefined it a bit for our purpose, so we call it MOAuth, so MCash off.
there's a joke in there somewhere waiting to happen, but anyway.
Yeah. basically, it's all about sharing data the right way. Because when you walk into, for instance, Burger King in Norway, this is technically enabled. It's currently not turned on using MCash, but it's obviously in the pipeline for Burger King. So when you scan the QR code that we're currently using, we can talk more about the QR code part afterwards. We're not religious about the QR code, but you know it has 100% distribution right now. It's free and it works on all smartphones. So when you scan the QR code to pay with MCash at the point of sale at Burger King, what happens is that there's an instant dialogue between your phone and MCash and the Burger King point of sale, and then potentially also any ERP or big data systems and CRM in the background if you want to. What can happen now is that you would get an instant dialogue on your phone saying, hey, thank you for paying with MCash at Burger King. Is it okay for you that we recognize you when you visit our stores? And is it okay for you that we count what you buy? In exchange, we'll give you every sixth burger for free. Consent or deny? And we're very specific about the active, free, willing, legally binding consent. And that's part of our technology as well. So there's actually a legally binding consent from you in the app using the two-factor authentication scheme that we've created. And using that, Burger King now gets to give you a loyalty ID that will be shared every time you pay at Burger King until you revoke that access. It gives you an incentive because as a consumer, we're fairly easy to convey into doing something like that because it's very obvious that you get something in return. So every sixth coffee for free or whatever. All of these schemes are well known. It's just that they're a pain to be part of because you need an extra card, you need an extra app, you need a piece of paper or something. Now it just happens by magic. And I think that's the key. And that data sharing is, we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg because everybody's talking about big data. I would argue that this is not big data. This is small data. This is the appropriate amount of data in context right here, right now, when you need it. You don't really care that you're a statistical number in a large kind of analysis of something. You would like to get your burger for free. And Burger King would like to give it to you if they get to do analysis on their part. So,
because there's a fairly strong chance that if you're eating a Burger King this time, that you actually don't mind a Burger King now and again, and so there's a chance for some loyalty there.
Absolutely, and I mean Burger King may put this into context. They may use it for tracking related to advertising or whatever. We don't really care about that as long as it's legally binding, as long as you gave your consent in the right way and you're always able to pull it back. And inside MCash, you can see all the relationships you have and you can pull them back whenever you want. You as the consumer own the data and you can retract anybody's access to it whenever you want. But then you also lose the upside of sharing it.
Absolutely. So in respect to where you see this going over 5 to 10 years, obviously there's a lot of pressure on this faster payments, but even more so there's pressure on creating more value around payments, that the payment itself is just not enough. It's not differentiated enough. Shoving a plastic card in a mobile wallet is not going to cut it. You need to be able to provide more value than that. In 5 to 10 years' time, how do you think this ecosystem is going to pan out? Who are going to be the players? Apart from Mcash.
Well, obviously we will be part of it. Now, rather than looking at players, because I think it's very hard to predict which players will win, there's a lot of money being shifted around to try to buy different market positions. If you look at the Visa and MasterCard push for NFC, for instance, there is a lot of money and resources and effort being poured into that. Maybe Apple will, you know, crumble and accept to implement NFC. To be honest with you, I don't think that they will do it. And I can elaborate on that, but I don't think we have enough time. to look at how the space will be, I think you're onto something when you say that there's not enough incentive, there's not enough value in, you know, just basically taping your current Visa card to your phone. Probably, you know, if you do that physically, or if you copy it into your card, or into your phone, or if it's an over-the-air thing, that's not enough. Just changing the way you pay today is not enough. You have to add something more. And I personally see this with the merchants that we work with, and I predict that that will be a trend that will drive the innovation for the next couple of years, where you will use a payment system where the payment part of it will almost go away. Technology will make it almost go away, but you know, the sharing of data and the use of data and you in a context, in a location, I think will be very useful. So I'm guessing in the future.
So it's more about understanding how you pay, why you pay, and where you are when you pay, so that we can now start to anticipate how to make that better for you, and how to integrate or how to streamline that payment service and add other value, whether it's based on location, relationship you've got, or some other mechanism.
Yeah, to sum it up, I think you're right. And one specific example which we see today is that we sell from advertisement today on behalf of our merchants. You walk by an advertising from, let's just say it's the iPhone 6 from your local retailer or whatever, and you want to buy this thing. The problem here is that there's a huge disconnect between you and the merchant, because you're there ready, you know, with your hand in the cookie jar, willing to give away the money and grab the cookie. The problem is that First of all, technically, it's a challenge to make that happen. But secondly, even if you were able to pay, how would they ship it back to you? Because they don't know your shipping details. Right now, we share that seamlessly, and stuff just pops up in the mail.
That data availability and being able to access that data so you can make those right decisions becomes a very strong differentiator then, doesn't it?
Yes. And we see that today. I mean, if in the future, I think you'll just walk by something and it will ask you, we know, Brett, that you would like this. You looked at this earlier today. Would you like to buy it if you get 10% off? And all you need to do is click the big green button and it will be shipped home to you, because the data will be shared with your consent without you having to enter anything.
Okay, so listen, I want to just bring in, at this point, I'm going to invite David Breer into the call. He's just called in. I'm trying to connect him right now, see how we go with that. David, are you on?
Absolutely, I'm here, Brett.
Great. Thanks for calling in. Appreciate it. So, you know, we were having a bit of a discussion on Twitter about this earlier. We've got Daniel from Mcash on the line. We're talking about sort of the future of payment, sort of differentiating around not just the modality of payment, about the data that's being brought to bear. And so I think, you know, you've got some interest in sort of what the development of Apple's payment system and ecosystem will be, and how that will have an impact to us. Tell us your thoughts around that.
Yeah, absolutely. As I've sort of said to you before, really, I think you know, this is probably going to be one of the most interesting things that's happened in banking for the last decade or so. You know, really, lots of banks, from my perspective, have been able to shoot the fish in the barrel to a certain extent. And really, what this does is, you know, completely disintermediate the banks from the data and from the banks from their customers. So you know, it's not just interesting from a payments perspective, but it's interesting in terms of what happens to all of that data that the banks have been able to get away with having for such a long period of time. So you know, from my perspective, this is a complete game changer. You know, it's one of the most interesting things that could happen in banking for a long time.
Now, we might, I mean, as we were talking with Daniel earlier about MCash's learning curve here, and we, you know, spoke to Ben Milne from Dwala about this as well, is that, you know, there's quite a significant learning curve to understand payments and get that right. So, you know, do you think that this is the reason it's taken Apple this long to get in payments? They've just been learning where their value is?
I think so. Yeah, I think there's definitely been a learning process in terms of what they've needed to do. But I think they've been playing quite clever chess with the technology as well. So they've, you know, they haven't run in and they haven't sort of committed too much too quickly. You know, very much with regards to the pieces that they've been putting in with the fingerprint sensor and getting everything right in place that actually works, then it you know, very much feels like they've got all of the chess pieces in the place to really sort of leverage the opportunity now. But you know, as you say, really the payments space is a very complex one. So, you know, if you're on there, then essentially they've got a benefit to be had right now. And given the amount of credit cards that they've got available to them, you know, really this could be a significant opportunity for them.
So, Daniel, what are your thoughts about, you know, Apple or iTunes as a competitor in the payment space or enabler, particularly with a NFC or contactless enabled iPhone?
Well, I think it's a very interesting theory. First of all, as I mentioned earlier, I don't really believe that they will launch a phone with NFC. It wouldn't make any sense.
No,
I don't believe. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, first of all, we welcome any competition. I mean, we're a small startup, and I mean, we have great traction now in Norway. The world is big, and there's enough for everybody. If you look at Apple, here's my theory or my take on this is that if you look at the revenue for Apple, currently. I would guess that about 70-80% of all the revenue received by Apple is actually coming to them through Visa or MasterCard, because that's where that's the payment tool that people use to buy their Apple products. If you look at the app stores and the actual physical products they sell online, most of these transactions are charged to Visa or MasterCard.
So they don't want to completely screw over Visa and MasterCard in the process.
So I don't think that they would like to do that. And that relates to the theory of Apple using all their iTunes account, the pre-stored card, about 650 million of those, to create some type of service, which is very interesting. But if you look at the other party, which has globally been successful in doing something on top of the rails of Visa MasterCard, you could look at PayPal. Now, sure. There are many huge challenges running such a large scheme on top of somebody else's rails. If you look at the relationship between PayPal and Visa and MasterCard, why is PayPal currently desperately moving away from credit cards, at least if you look towards Europe and their strong relationships or trying to build relationship with banks to go over to what you have, the ACH network, and they're looking into direct debit solutions, specifically here in the Nordic markets. They're desperately looking into these alternative ways of charging people's funding sources because they don't like the interchange and the challenges with the current networks because they're in the pockets of somebody else.
Was an iTunes network could theoretically add interchange or add a sort of intermediary fee, couldn't it?
Well, it would have to, because at the end of the day, even though Apple is very big and have a lot of push power towards probably both Visa and MasterCard, at the end of the day, if you look at the payment. Yeah, but first of all, they want to make money out of it, so they really would have to add that other level of service. I mean, it's not a payment service, and as a comment to you, David, as you said, I think that they would have to add something extra, right? That they've been sitting around waiting. So if they are coming around with a payment service right now, I hope for their sake that that they're bringing something extra to the table, because just utilizing the 650 million cards they have on file will only drive more revenue for Visa and MasterCard, and it will certainly not be attractive to merchants unless you bring something extra, because it will just be more expensive than, you know, getting the service from the people where you're getting the service from today, which could be any acquiring party. So they have to bring something extra.
So, David, I know we've got to go to a break very quickly, but how do you think they're going to monetize this, Apple, if they get into this?
I think exactly the way we've been describing. Really, I think it's about the data. It's not about the transaction. I don't think they're in a position where they can properly monetize that at this stage. But with the data, with being able to actually fully understand those customers and actually be able to be the point of contact into those customers, then that is where most internet banking platforms are making their money at the moment, is by actually being able to be the voice to the customer, and by doing that, Apple are basically becoming a bank without a banking license, from my perspective.
Great, great. All right, well, listen, guys, David, thanks for calling in all the way from the UK.
No problem at all. Thanks so much.
We'll have to get you back on the show after they launch and have some more commentary on it.
Indeed, absolutely.
Well, you're with Brett King on Breaking Banks. We'll be right back after this brief break.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Your bank's customers expect comprehensive, convenient, and consistent service when and where they need it. A mobile app is a great start, but with so many devices and operating systems out there, it can be hard to keep up with demand. That's why today's leading banks count on the Kony Multichannel Experience Cloud. With Kony, you can design, develop, and manage multi-channel apps from one integrated platform. Build an app once, and with one click, you can deploy it securely across all digital channels, phones, tablets, desktop, and more. That means more efficient for you and a better experience for your customers. Want to get to market fast? Explore Kony's range of ready-to-run apps, including retail, commercial, and private banking. With features like person-to-person transfers, targeted campaigns, built-in integrations, and cutting-edge compliance, Kony apps provide the framework and flexibility you need to rise above the competition. Go beyond first-generation mobile banking. Visit kony.com/BK to launch your multi-channel strategy. That's kony.com/BK.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. It was great to have a caller all the way from the UK. We continue to get some really interesting global engagement. Last week we had participation from Faisal Khan in Pakistan, and it really has become a very global show. So very grateful to the 50,000 or so of the listeners that tune in regularly to Breaking Banks around the world. In many countries, it's great to have a fantastic platform like this. So, Daniel, before the show, we were talking about some of the changes coming up. Tell us a little bit about, what's planned for MCash over the next 12 months. You've talked a little bit about that already, but how can people sign up for MCash? Where can they try it out? How do you suggest they get started? Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, well, first of all, our plans, as you know, we're regulated in sharp contrast to a lot of the different startups out there inside the payment space. We're actually operating under an FSA approval. We are launching within the EU. That's the first kind of step outside of Norway, is that our license enables us to roll out towards EU. We're very optimistic, so we're working with some bank partners in different countries around the EU, so you'll see us pop up and some interesting countries. The next step after that would potentially be to turn on P2P globally. Huge step for us, and I can't confirm that we're doing it within the next 6 months, but we are discussing it. It's very interesting. For people that would like to have a look at Mcash, I encourage those to visit the mcash.no page. There is a an English page there as well, but we're currently targeting the Norwegian market. But there are some info on the site. We're staying fairly Norwegian right now because of everything going on there out there in the markets. We would like to, dip our feet in the water first in Norway and see how everything runs. For now, it seems to be very good. Feel free to follow us on Twitter. Use Pay with Mcash. So you can just follow us on Twitter, Pay with Mcash. And check out our web page. And if you're in Norway listening to this, feel free to download the app. It's available on App Store and Google Play. It will be released later on towards the EU markets, but sadly, because of regulations, we can't open it up for everybody just yet.
But that's the advantage of being in Europe, is that once you're regulated in one part of Europe, it's far easier to launch across the EU space, isn't it?
Yeah, regulatory is very nice, and there's a bunch of different other very attractive things with Europe as well. If you look at the Payment Service Directive version 2, which is about to be pushed out from the EU Parliament, it will crack open a can of worms. If you look at multilateral interchange fees, for instance, for Visa and MasterCard, it will break up a lot of the four-party systems. It will be a blast to be inside this payment space in the EU for the next couple of years.
Fantastic. Well, Daniel, it's been an absolute delight to have you on the show today, and I thank you for calling in all the way from Norway. Are you in Trondheim today? Is that where you are?
No, I'm actually 1 hour south of Oslo in my hometown of Tønsberg, the oldest city in Norway.
Okay, the oldest city in Norway. Well, there you go. The oldest city in Norway producing one of the newest mobile payment schemas and innovations on the planet. So, well done.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me, Brett. Thanks a lot.
No problem at all. So, it was great to have Daniel dial in from all the way from Norway. We'll invite Beth Lee to join us at this point. Beth, are you on?
Hi, Brett. How are you?
Great. So, Beth, just we've got a few minutes left before we close out the show, but I thought I would bring you on just to sort of I've been talking a lot about this fantastic gathering of fintech people that we've got coming up in Boston in a few weeks. I'm delighted to go along myself, but you've got particularly, I was really interested in Ramiz Nam, who is joining NextBank US in Boston in a few weeks, because Ramiz is one of the really big up and coming sci-fi writers. He's written this book Nexus. It's gone very, very well. He was in the running for the some of the big sci-fi awards this year, one of the big debut authors. But he's a really, really interesting thinker. So I wanted to talk to you about NextBank, the event who's in Asia and Europe has decided to finally come to the U.S.
That's it, Brett. Absolutely, and thank you very much for having me on today. I really appreciate it. You just mentioned Ramiz Nam, who is a science fiction writer. He's also actually a computer scientist and a futurist. So he's quite an amazing individual, and he is going to be kicking off the conference, I think, really setting the stage of what sort of discussions, what sort of thought-provoking issues we're going to be talking about in the future of banks, in the future of technology, and really the future of the way that we all interact and communicate.
So tell us a bit about some of the sponsors and what the objective of the show is this year and who else is speaking.
Yeah, the event is actually a global event. So we are launching it in the States and bringing it to Boston on June 11th and 12th. Of this year, and it's going to be fantastic. The point of the event is really to sort of be not like any other conference that's out there for the financial services industry. We look at the intersection of design, technology, and banking, and really from that, you need to be innovative to be able to bring forward some new thinking and new ideas and new discussion, and that's exactly what we're trying to achieve at the event. I guess the event itself was started by Rob Finlay, who is based in Singapore, and he is the one who actually found a lot of frustration with banking events. And it was his thought that, you know, we need to get entrepreneurs, we need to get venture capitalists, we need to get startups and technologists and new people together to create this discussion on how we take the banking industry into the future. How do we create something that's unique and really outside of the scope of what we think of the banking industry is. So it started there, and it has run in 8 or 9 different cities around the world, and each event has its own culture and its own focus in what it's looking to do. But we here in the States are really looking to take a futuristic point of view and to really get discussion, interaction, and innovation going at the events with all the great lineup of speakers that we have.
And this is this is actually interesting, because this week they just finished off the Next Bank Asia event down in Singapore, and that was received extremely well. Huge event there. So we've also had Rob on the show previously, and we definitely get him on the show again. But you've also announced recently that BBVA is a new sponsor for the show, right?
It is, yeah, and they've actually come on board as a global sponsor. So locally in Boston...
All right, okay.
Yeah, locally in Boston, we're focusing on obviously the U.S. market, as that's our sort of our cultural market, and Yodlee has come on board as our sponsor, as our main sponsor for the event, along with the Bank Innovators Council. But BBVA has actually come on board with Next Bank globally, so they will be supporting our Bogota event as well as the Madrid event in the U.K., in Europe. So they have decided to take, they have an interest, of course, as you can imagine, in the States, especially with the new acquisition of Simple. So we are absolutely thrilled that they've come on board to support the event, and we're also thrilled to welcome Simple as our keynote on day 2 as well. We have the co-founder and CFO.
Shamir is coming along for the event as well. So if you want to find out what's happening, what the latest is with Simple, then it'd be a great opportunity to catch up with Shamir as the co-founder, along with Josh at Simple. So tell me about some of the other speakers that you're excited to have at the event.
Yeah, I think the key thing to know about the event is we're not a banking event, really. We're looking to integrate banking technology and design. So we have 3 different themes, and the first theme is just that. There we will have, we'll take the attendees on that futuristic journey, bringing out some ideas and new thoughts. Ramaz Nam will kick off the event with that. We also have a robotics analyst who's going to be there and talking about robots and how they're basically getting involved in business applications and all different types of industries. And will robots come into the banking industry? I don't know, via an ATM or something in the future?
I think they have robots in the banking industry already, but...
I'll leave that for you to discuss. So we do have a robotics analyst there. We also have a number of wonderful different speakers coming from outside of the industry. So especially during our second theme, which is about tools and ideas for transformation, we will be bringing in a couple executives from different agencies to talk about storyboarding and how important it is to create story and to create meaning, so that when you're interacting with your customers, when you're creating new customer interfaces, that story and that meaning is developed behind. We'll also have from Michael Wallens from ESPN. Now, there's the entertainment industry coming into play, and he's going to be talking a great deal about user experiences. That's what he is. He's a user experience designer. So on that tools and ideas for transformation, that side's really key to sort of see what other industries are doing. And then our third theme is really about innovative and aspirational methods on how do we get here? How do we get to this future? And that will all be on innovation from the ground up, innovation from the inside out, and the future of innovation with Matthew Harris from Bain in New York coming to speak about what VCs are looking for in startups, what sort of technology are out there now, what's the importance of innovation internally and externally, and how a VC will approach this, which I think is really unique information for banks to take home with them to say, right, well, this is what VCs are looking for. We've got to start to look in a new direction as well.
Well, Matt Harris, of course, was with Village Ventures previously, but is now with Bain. And but he was one of the first investors in Simple, so he's got to be happy right now, having exited from that new BBV or the BBVA acquisition. Who else do you have on the venture side of things coming along to join?
We also have Phil Swisher, who is actually on our advisory board, which I should probably mention. I'm not from the financial industry, but our advisory board of eight, which, Brett, you are a part of, is really the driver behind this event. It's their insight and their content creation that has really driven the development of this event. So, you know, we're put together by the industry. The way that we look at it is we're not an events company and we're not a marketing or publishing company. So Phil Swisher, who is really an innovator at BBH here in Boston, he's going to be really giving out the end note keynote on how to take innovation internally and how to create a strategy of innovation internally. So we have him on board. And we also have Sarah Biller, who is the president of the Capital Market Exchange, and she is going to be taking innovation from the ground up. She's a startup. She's a small entity and having to innovate from basically nothing to create her company, and especially in this financial services space, she's got a very unique outlook.
Awesome. And you've also got City Ventures coming along, and Bank Innovators Council. I know JP is on the advisory board as well, but what's their role in the event?
They're our founding partners. They've had a great deal of influence, I think, over the event in helping us reach out to the community in the United States. They have a membership organization, and we've been able to reach out to those members there and ask them what's important. We've been able to work with them very closely in developing a relationship with other providers and technologists and entrepreneurs and really the whole lot. So they've been very influential and very very close to us in really getting down and dirty with the community in here in America, in the States.
Okay, great. Well, Beth, that's fantastic. I look forward to being, you know, one of the reasons I love this, I love Finovate and some of the other events here, but this is a real fintech who's who. And it's going to be a lot more about networking, a lot more about getting together. And there's going to be some really deep thinking here from the robotics through to Rami's, his futurist view on things. It's going to be fantastic. So where can we, nextbankusa.com is the site, but when is the event? Just again?
Yes, the event is June 11th and 12th here in Boston. It's nextbankusa.com. And you're right, Brett. I think we're going to have some pretty high-level thinking and some really great discussion and, as I like to say, some hopefully some feisty bits and pieces.
Fantastic, fantastic. And the venue in Boston is?
The venue is called District Hall, and actually that has a story in and of itself. It's a brand-new building that was just developed and opened in October of last year. In Boston's new innovation district that former Mayor Menino has put into place. So the building is pretty phenomenal.
Fantastic.
You can read more about that on the website
Great.
As well.
All right, thanks, Beth. Thanks for joining the show. That wraps up another Breaking Banks this week. You'll hear from us again next week, but that's Breaking Banks for this week on the 15th of May. See you again next week. Bye.
Been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll explore more changes and challenges next week.